Hello, good evening. Excuse us for the technical difficulties. Now we are going to have a talk about HPC in Debian, the distribution for clustering, and Fabrizio Canini is with us. So, Fabrizio.
Hello, everybody. Since I came here in last Saturday, I was thinking of what I'm going to tell you. I'm not sure about it right now yet, but what I know is that I've seen some problems when I was first when I became researching to change the ROX Linux installation of my company's cluster. I noticed that there was pretty much documentation available, but what I noticed that most of the times that things that just don't work, like you had a lot of things manually do. You had to edit configuration files, you had to make templates or whatever sorts. But there's a lot of manual work to do. Things that you didn't need to do, like when using ROX, for example. And also, it seems that people doesn't seem to be aware. People, what I mean people is that most common of people that use clusters, like scientists and engineers, especially for numerical simulation problems. In weather forecast or physics or chemistry or geosciences also. So whatever you need a huge amount of computing power, most of the people they don't seem to be aware that Debian is also a great distro for making this kind of for this kind of task. So what I'm actually proposing right now. We have the tools. We have a lot of tools in this area. MPI implementations, libraries, task managers, and you go on. And compilers. We have GFortran. We have GCC. We have G++. That now on version 4.3 they have OpenMP implementations, which makes them on the same level that commercial compilers like PathScale, like Intel, like PGI. I figured that we should reach out to these people, see, hey, what do you think about using Debian this in a cluster situation? Or especially people that is already using Debian on the situations. Hey, what do you think about using Debian in a cluster situation? Was it hard to set up? Where you had to find any difficulties? What could be automatized? What is the boring tasks that could be automatized? Also, yes, of course, reaching out people that have not used Debian for this kind of environment. Why have you choose another solution? Of why have you choose to go with SUSE or Red Hat or ROX or CentOS or whatever? See where you can improve. I think that you know, most of the cases that Debian is successfully used in a cluster environment, it usually takes what I call an inside champ for doing such a things. Something that somebody that is already on the organization and that already knows Debian, that has been using it for quite some time, and this guy knows how to do it, and he wants to do it, but he needs to convince his workmates or his managers. His managers that Debian is indeed the right thing to do, the right distro to use. I think that we had to pick people from like Debian Science mailing list, which has a lot of HPC users. I think we had to like I said before, we have to reach out. We have to know what these people need so that we can improve Debian, so that we can go on one step further to world domination. I think it also would be initially it would be great to have to make a mailing list to discuss what is exactly this people need. So what I'm proposing to do, I'm going to reach out to these people and see what they want. In a research like what Paul has done, perhaps, but more specifically oriented to this kind of situations. I'm also going to start working on Debian cluster components. If you don't know it, it's a very nice project. It is. We now have wireless, right? Do we have? Oh, right. How do we do it? Right here. No. Well, whatever. Well, links will be backed on the lecture, on the the session links and contents. This guys, I've been talking with the developers of Debian cluster components, and they seem to really like Debian. They really want to make this work. I think they share the same will that I am, that to make Debian the distro for cluster environments. So now I'd like to know from you who from you are using Debian in such environments. What do you think about what it could be, what is good, what is bad, and what is ugly, and what can we do to improve it? Which packages would you like to see in Debian? Which packages do you use?
One of the nice things about distributions like Oscar and ROX is that typically you can have a single CD that you put in the system, you boot it, and then you can boot your different client nodes off of the supercomputer. That type of a distribution would go a long way to helping people utilize Debian in, say, a high school or a situation to allow the students to practice using and programming supercomputers.
Yeah, there are some projects like this. There are some like Pelican HPC, it's a bootable CD. There's also Parallel Gnopics that does something like this. Debian cluster components, they also have a CD like this that you boot on a CD, and you have a host and three virtual nodes so that you can use it for learning how to manage a cluster, how to use MPI, how to program with MPI, and how to, not even this, but you can do like learn routing or anything you like. And it has a lot of the standard tools that you use it, like LAM, MPI, OpenMPI, compilers, Python and Java. I think it's what this is nice for educational purposes. Surely it's something that we should take a look, but. What I'm trying to do right now is to know at which point we are right now. And we have a lot of users and we have a lot of tools, but what more do we need to make it? To go up and to make things better to the users, which are our final target. And do I answer? Mike.
What's your personal background about clusters?
I work in a weather forecast company in Porto Alegre, Brazil. So I've been there in more than a year working there. We have six node cluster, which does the weather forecast for the whole Brazil. Twice a day, It does the weather forecast for the whole Brazil twice a day. It takes some 3.5 hours for the simulation to complete. It takes also some 10 gigabytes per node of generated data. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to. I've been researching. Right now we're using a ROX Linux installation. That's what I'm trying to put them out, and to put Debian in. And while researching this, that's what I've come to realize that what people were doing to. What people were doing to have Linux, to have Debian running in a cluster environment. So since last year I've been imagining, well, what can I do to make it better? What can I do to make it things go smoother or go just works? So for people. In a cluster environment.
Another question that you would have from a marketing standpoint is, what is the penetration of Debian in clusters as opposed to the other competitors? How many people are using the different versions of Linux in that? And you know, if Debian is 2%, well then you might say that there's a lot to be done. If Debian is 90%, then you say, well, you know, the other is just noise. And so the question is, how many, you know, what percentage of sites use Debian?
I guess we could say that Debian is not really the number one in the number one in cluster usage. At least if this looking by the top 500 clusters of world, top500.org, if you want to know. There's a lot of clusters that they just don't release which version or which distro they are using. They just say Linux. But the most popular distros for cluster environments, they are SUSE 9 and 10. Red Hat and the price 3 and 4. After that, they come CentOS and ROX, and after that, Debian. There are a few clusters running FreeBSD, one or two running HP UX, a dozen running. Video. Half a dozen one in AIX and Solaris, but Linux as a general is the top dog in cluster environments, but Debian specifically is not. I think we have a long road to go. I think we have a lot of nodes to get into. If we want to be really representative in the cluster community. To what? Answered.
Well, again, my only comment on this is if you contact, you know, so you've talked to some of the companies that produce cluster hardware, and some of them do have Debian and do use Debian. So the question I would ask them is, why did you choose Debian over a different distribution? And then to contact the people in the places that don't use Debian and say, why did you choose this other one? I remember when Red Hat first started charging for their Enterprise Edition, and their charge was something like $1,000 a node. And they came to the supercomputing conference in, I forget where it was that year. And I went up to them and asked them, how much are you going to charge the cluster people for their clusters? And they said, $1,000 a node. And I said, good luck. So, I mean, obviously they've changed their licensing somewhat since then, but I would imagine that people who run clusters, who run Red Hat Enterprise, are still paying some amount of money to Red Hat and for something, I hope. So, you know, there must be a reason why they're doing that. Again, my understanding of ROX and Oscar are basically that they are more or less, you know, they use a distribution as a basis, but then they add their management software around it, and it isn't a distribution like Red Hat is a distribution or Debian is a distribution. It's more of a wrapping around some basic distribution.
Yeah, ROX is based on CentOS. The version that we use at my company is ROX 4.2.1, I think. It's based on CentOS 4. It goes at Sarge time, I think.
So one thing that might help convince them to go with Debian would be more of a liaison between Debian and themselves, so that every time there was a new release of Debian that came out, it would be easier for them to upgrade than, you know, than it might be with CentOS if CentOS wasn't paying as much attention, because CentOS is based off of Red Hat. So there may be a disconnect there that makes it difficult for them to keep up with releases of CentOS that Debian could help to solve with a little bit of communication back and forth.
I guess that because CentOS it follows more or less the same release schedule of Red Hat Enterprise. It's just cleaned up Red Hat, cleaned up and recompiled Red Hat Enterprise. So they have the same release schedule and maintenance dates, maintenance periods like Red Hat's Enterprise. And I think one of the reasons that people don't use Debian is sometimes is the lack of the inside champ, which I've spoken. That without this guy, people they don't really go after quite a lot. They just take something that they know that somewhere else did it and it just worked. They just install it, like real scientists and engineers. They don't actually. They think about the same questions that we as developers think. They don't actually think about this freedom and open source that we do praise very much. So that's why I think that Debian has a long time to Debian has a long road to walk till it is a big player in the cluster market. We don't have mindshare, if we want to say so, and because people they don't act because especially because when installing Debian in a cluster, some things that they just don't work, they don't just works. People get afraid of using Debian because Debian is hard to install. That same old phantom that Debian is hard to install.
Well, I work at SGI and I have had access to an ICE box, which is what we sell as a cluster, and it was my bounce box, so I tried to install Debian on it, and the Lenny installer at that point wouldn't boot on it. So, like, I could debug it and spend time on it, but at that point, I just really needed to work, and I believe that when you get to deploy a cluster, you just don't want to debug an installer. You just want it to work. Actually, it looks like a few years ago, SGI was using Debian as the base OS for the operating system that was shipped on the clusters. Again, that's I haven't been in the company for a really long time. That's more corridor noises than anything else. And I've been trying to look why we moved away to go to SUSE. Part of the things could be that SUSE slash 10 is shipping a 2.6.16 kernel with a lot of work that has been made to backport all the fixes to the kernel while maintaining a lot of ABI compatibility. That in those machines, you sometimes have hardware for which the vendor will ship you a binary module that will work only on one kernel. And that's really important to make it work. And the kernel team is not doing that in Debian because we don't have the manpower or the time to do it. But that's things that you require to make it work properly. I've been told about a network driver which had a free software implementation that was really, really slow compared to the binary one and absolutely unusable for people in that environment. So that's some of the things.
Yes. Yeah. So, Spiriel, there really are sort of, I think, three categories of things that get in the way of Debian having a larger cluster market share right now. And if this is something we want to work on, we have to figure out how much of this we can address and then come up with a good plan for addressing it. The first one is that lots of clusters do run with interesting interconnect fabrics and things like this for which the device drivers may not be fully integrated into a kernel.org kernel, and therefore may not be in our default kernel packages that we're shipping. And you know, there's always device driver issues with different kinds of hardware, but there's plenty of cluster hardware today available today that Debian runs very well on. So there's certainly that class of cases that we can think about. But I don't think we should get bogged down on that, because there are two other classes of things that we ought to think about. One is that a lot of people running clusters are running, you know, commercial ISV-provided applications on those clusters. And when they do that, they have the same problem of the choice of underlying operating system that anybody with a dependency on a commercial application does. And that is that that application provider is going to choose the set of operating systems that they choose to certify that application for use on if you want to have support for it. And today, if that's Linux, it's probably one of the commercial distributions for lots of, you know, good business reasons. And there is a chicken and egg situation there, where if there were lots of demand for those applications on Debian for use on clusters, they would probably port them. But, you know, how do you get there if the applications aren't available? How do you break that cycle? But the third thing is that, for whatever reason, there are a number of cluster-oriented distributions that are out there. I mean, ROX is one example. There are others. And many of those seem to have been built on, you know, a debranded, rebranded Red Hat package base. It may well be because they see some opportunity to be technically compatible with some of these binary applications that are built and certified on Red Hat or SUSE or something. I don't really know what the driving force or the history behind that is, but it seems to me that one opportunity would be to create some custom Debian distribution or other lightly derived version of the distribution that's specifically targeting the cluster community and includes, you know, some interesting management tools and related things that would make it attractive to them. I don't know if such a Debian-based distribution exists right now or not, but if not, then when someone goes and starts doing, you know, Google or whatever searches looking for Linux and clusters, they may not see us as being an immediately obvious choice.
Yeah, one of the other barriers that I've seen to Debian adoption in clusters is exactly of proprietary applications like fluid dynamics applications that are, I don't remember the application, but it's lots of engineer applications like wind tunnel simulations and that use a lot of dynamic fluids computations, and they are very, very expensive applications. And they just, and when you see, when you go to the software house webpage, it only says Red Hat Enterprise 3, 4, SUSE 9, SUSE 10, and that's it about Linux. Another operating systems may have HP UX or Solaris or AIX from IBM, but that's it. I think that another thing is of drivers that, like Dale said, like there's no free Mirinet drivers available today, only binary blobs that you just dump in your kernel. And they are made only for SUSE and for Red Hat. So there's another barrier of inclusion. While on the other side, most InfiniBand providers that I know, they have free drivers, and most of them are already on the mainline kernel. And that's a good thing.
Well, actually, Bedale says he doesn't know the history of it, but I do. And the thing is that back in the early days of the supercomputers, Red Hat gave a lot of attention to it, and they actually put out a very early CD called the Rocket Science CD. And it just had all of the software for clustering of that time on that CD. And it got a lot of the people in the national labs who did a lot of the work on things like ROC and OSCAR using Red Hat, which is why they were so upset when Red Hat changed their licensing. Of course, CentOS got around that. But when you say that, yes, InfiniBand is available with some open drivers and Mirinet is not, well, but that's the thing. With Red Hat or SUSE, you can get both and you're not tied to just one. See, I mean, it's the whole ecology of it. It's also the ecology that a lot of the people that work on supercomputers are not computer scientists. They're scientists, they're engineers. And they're still programming with Fortran and stuff like that. Not that there's anything wrong with Fortran.
Fortran, okay. 77.
Sometime 90.
But in any case, what they want is the same thing running on their notebook so they can do their preliminary programming and everything and then take it over to, the cluster. And these are all a group of things to do it. My greatest suggestion would be to aim towards putting together a package that, as before, which would get in students using Debian, so as they went up and came out, they would say, hey, Debian's a great distribution for doing this. And that would be your inside person, that you say your champion, to getting it spread out across a lot more of these areas. Or to pick a side of high-performance computing that a lot of the national labs, for example, don't even think about. For example, financial computing, data mining, that type of supercomputing that, it would be a whole new marketplace that a lot of the Debian packages could actually utilize that. Would it concentrate on things like the real multi-core type of programming, so OpenMP to get that going? And pardon me for saying so, but from my experience, the GCC compilers do not produce the same type of performance that you would see out of a really commercial compiler that is tuned to a particular architecture. You're going to see a 5 or 10% performance that over 2,000 processors is like 200 processors that you've got. Right?
If you look at i64, one of the architectures still used in HPC, you see that last time I checked on half of the spec benchmarks, actually the Pro 64 compiler, which is the open source oldest GI compiler, is still the fastest compiler, much faster than the vendor compiler.
Well, I wouldn't use the Itanic anyway, so
But as I said, Pro 64 is picking up a little bit of stuff. Intel has some people working on it. Also for other platforms, there is LLVM. Mm-hmm. So it's not like GCC is the only compiler we still have.
Okay, but the thing is, when you're sitting there with your stopwatch trying to figure out how fast the compiler is, because all you're interested in is CPU. As opposed to portability.
I guess that's not just that. GCC is not that bad. I've seen tests made by a Brazilian university showing that with the same level of optimization, GCC 4.2 has less than 1% of, it was less than 1% lower than Intel 9 compiler in C and C++. But it was much lower without optimizations. But I think that GCC, while it has its bad things and low, but GCC is going pretty strong on, and it's getting better each release. If we do the same test again, which is with GCC 4.3, I'm sure that the difference between GCC and Intel compiler 9 would be even smaller.
And one of the things that you should be pushing with this is in the universities, they're trying to teach computer science and trying to teach high-performance computing, is the fact that you can see the source code for these compilers where you can't see the source code. That's a huge advantage for in an educational space. Okay, that, you know, you should be leveraging the openness of the operating system and the openness of the compilers to the educational marketplace. And then you'll build that support as the students come out of the college and go to work for different companies.
Yeah, I had a few words after your talk. I personally work in a French aerospace lab. We are big users of high-performance computing, supercomputers, and the like. This is not really my field of expertise. I'm very sorry for that. Our supercomputers are, as far as I know, running commercial Linux distributions for only one reason, because this is why what we were supplied with, and only for that reason. The other reason probably is because, as you said, and I wanted to confirm what we said, the showstopper also has been probably the commercial libraries, the commercial Fortran compiler. Yes, we are using Fortran. I confirm that. Sometimes Fortran 90. And actually, I think that the people who are using our supercomputers and our cluster don't care a lot about the C compiler. They don't care at all, but they care a lot about the Fortran compiler that's on the supercomputer. And if this Fortran compiler is, for instance, provided by Intel and only works on one Red Hat derived distribution, there will be no choice to. We will have to go with them.
Just to have an idea, all the weather forecast models that I use in my company, it is almost wholly written in Fortran 90.
Yeah, we actually use the
just
very same.
Just the MPI part is written in C.
We use the very same kind of supercomputer than French Meteo Center. And this is exactly the same culture. And this culture is a very old culture, and it takes a lot of time to change it. And not only through the students, but through the infrastructure people. You need the infrastructure people, those who run these supercomputers, to also get this idea that there are some free distributions around.
Any Anybody else? Well, so I'd like to thank you, everybody, to come listen, come see me babble this stuff. I hope we can talk a lot more by mailing lists or by private mail or IRC, whatever. And I'm personally going to pursue it, what I said here today. And if anybody wants to, if anybody want have any idea or wants to talk with me after that, I'll be at the Hack Lab. So thank you a lot for coming.